Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Higher Dimensions. This is your hostess for today, Phyllis Pricer. I'm welcoming you back again to our show and hope that you'll have a lot of fun. We're going to do readings again. And sorry I don't have another guest today, but we hope to start by next week having more guests on. We have had a lack of them, but I hope it's been fun talking to you. I know I enjoy myself in talking to you. I have, for the last Saturday in the month, scheduled the people who wrote those numbers and were the Numbers Phenomenon book, and those who are going to really be very interesting to speak to. I also am going to be inviting a lady, Suzanne, who has written about, actually has a video out, which I watched yesterday evening with a friend, of space and the possible visitation of those from outer space, those who do the, I want to say what she said, and just I can't get it out of my mouth. So let me put it this way. It's the crop circles that are out and about throughout the world, 41 countries of the world, I think she said. And she's interviewed a lot of people. Some of them, well, I don't know any of them, really. And it was very interesting, though. I watched the video, the CD of it, and it's a very compelling description, a very compelling evidence for there being people or aliens or extraterrestrials, however you want to call them, from other solar systems. It's absolutely fascinating, I feel. And I am hoping that she will be as wonderful to talk to as she is in her interviews with other people. Some of the crop circles that I saw were, I would call, mandalas. They're very intricate, beautiful designs. And there's no way you can convince me that someone at night, without lights, or even just holding a flashlight in their hand, is going to be able to create these magnificent pieces of art, because quite frankly, that's what they are. They are geometrical in design. They are fluid. They can be used, what I keep forgetting what the instrument is called when we used to do geometry. It's been a lot of years, folks, so forgive me if I can't remember it. At any rate, these are beautiful works. And there was one that was no question about it. It was a human face. And it looked human, as I said, a human face. And another one by it that they didn't show such a clear picture of, so I couldn't tell you what it was. But from all intents and purposes, it seems to me that we are being contacted by those who are not of our world. And it's an absolutely fascinating concept. And I am really looking forward to talking about that. Now, we will be doing readings again today. I can give past life. We can do predictions and so forth. It's coming down to, I guess, a very creative time. There's a lot of work being done on all levels by many people. And I think it's a very exciting future that we are going to be having in the not-distant future. And so it would be wonderful if we would all work at keeping our minds in extremely positive vein. As I mentioned last week, I felt inspired to talk about humming and using the humming sound to do creative visualizations, along with creative visualizations, to bring about something that I would like to create, to bring into manifestation, that I have been working on for many years. And her latest word that I heard is, from a concrete land standpoint, is to wait until this coming week that we should hear something. And if that's the case, I will let you know. But I will tell you that vibrations are extremely powerful. They're extremely healing, both from the standpoint of physically in your body. The humming sounds have the ability to really cause a resonance. And for infants, this is a very important gift. If you can do work with infants and humming, the vibrations of your, that comes from your humming assists the babies. And it is good to hum to them when, if you don't want to sing or you don't feel you have a strong voice. But if you have infants, grandchildren, little, whatever, you know, humming is very soothing and calming. And it can help them become more attuned to our world and their own little bodies. So I would urge you to do that if you can. And also for your own self, humming is extremely healing to the human body. You notice when people are happy, they have a tendency to hum. And that humming raises their vibrations even more. So my feeling is you might want to just start humming when you can as a way of just bringing self-healing for yourself and lifting your spirits. Things go faster, I believe. I'm not sure whether I read this somewhere. If I did, it's way back in the midst of time with me. About, I know where I heard it. I read about it. It is with the wisdoms of the teachings and the learnings of the masters, wisdom and the masters of the Far East. That's what it is. It's from that book. And they were talking about a singing Shayla, which is a student of the spiritual arts in India, and he would hum, and as the people would walk, their burdens would get lighter and lighter, and they could walk long distances without feeling fatigued. And the writer, Baird Spaulding, said it was the humming and the singing that went along that made it seem as though their feet didn't even touch the earth. And so they were able to accomplish prodigious feats of travel to accomplish their goals when going through India, going from one part of a country to up to Tibet and further, and visiting the different monasteries. And that was back at the turn of the last century, or the prior century, I should say. So you might consider that as well as a strong possibility and a nice tip, if you will, to moving forward and being able to do work and to complete things when you're tired. It sounds strange, but it doesn't take that much effort to hum. And if you work at it, it may be that you will end up getting all the work and labor done that you need to get done at the time you need it to be done. So, you know, again, let's put this down as a good health tip to each of you to hum and to see if it will help you in bringing about manifestations in your life. Some of the other things, and I wanted to recommend again that you call today, not wait too long into the program, because I'd like to get as many people in for readings as I can. Of course, there might be fewer people out there because it is a beautiful weekend and gorgeous days. But let me give you the phone number. It's 888-815-9756. And feel free to call in. It's a beautiful day, and I am delighted to be here with you. Some of what I've become a little bit more interested in, simply because of the great plethora of information that's being sent to me by friends and just over the internet, and that's being written about, is the coming times of the year 2012, the supposed end of the Mayan calendar. It's very interesting because there are several interpretations of that, some of which seems to be the closing of a particular era and the opening of a new one. And the astrological portent is that it's an alignment that's only seen every so many thousand years. 26,000 years, something like that, on the Earth's plane. It's the Earth's orbit, and it is when the sun, due to the travel of the Earth around the sun and the sun's position in the sky, that it is that year when the sun is in the exact center of the galaxy, which is extremely unusual. And then Earth's wobble, which you know is always, we are on a wobbling basis. We are not totally in a round circle, but an elliptical one. This, too, is a part of what's going on, and the gravitational pull may have an effect on conditions here on Earth. So I'm very interested in learning more about some of the practical, not the woo-woo side and the wild speculations, but I'm interested in learning about the scientific, the geographic, the all of the information that is coming with regard to the change in the world, which will be affected. Now, we know the moon itself affects tides around the world, and so how much more important would it be when we have the sun, which is such a powerful planet and one by which we all really survive by having, they moves into another area and it's affected by all the other planets and the gravitational pull of them. So I am interested in that. There's supposed to be some very good series on the History Channel, which I listened to and gave some really wonderful information on the coming times, and it had a very good program, I thought, with regard to the Maya calendar and the codices that survived the destruction back when the conquistadors came over and thought that everything was pagan and referred to pagan gods, not realizing it was scientific in nature. But then you had a fear, and fear has a tendency to cause people to do very, very stupid things. And that's why working with fear is not such a is an important part of our life. Letting it rule our lives is not what we should do. But we should allow our brains to dictate what we want to listen and learn to, and do not fall prey to fear. And it's very easy to say do, because that's what sometimes we all do. We all are human beings, and we all do sometimes. Well, seems like we almost can't help ourselves. It takes a lot of discipline, a lot of thought, a lot of work, and a lot of cool judgment and setting aside emotional responses. Not to say it's not being empathetic, but not to accept unquestioning what is told to us, even if these sources of information may have been correct before. Sometimes incorrect information does come through, so I have been learning to become more independent in my thinking rather than depending on others to do the thinking and to check things against my own internal verification system. And as I've taught you on the radio before, how to verify for your own self whether something is correct or incorrect for you. It may not be for another person, but for you it is a correctness or truth, and you do that by testing yourself on the various ways that I've taught you. If you want to learn more ways, please let me know, because there are a number of different methods that I know of that I have yet to go over and explain to you all. So if there is an interest in learning, you know, give me a call, let me know, and I'll be glad to do more of the lessons and pull some things out. Now, since we're reaching back into the past today, on past lives, I thought I'd give you some information on how to seek out on your own past lives. I've done this before, but I think it's been at least a year or more since I've done this, so I will mention it again. It takes time, and it takes concentration, and it takes focus, so if you're going to do the following technique, my earnest suggestion is that you take a time and a place where you will be alone, not disturbed, for a half an hour or so. Anybody can do this. It's a matter of determination and just being consciously aware and focusing, using your mind to focus on what you want to see. There are a number of ways that we become aware of past life connections. There's a knowing, just a gut feeling. There's also a deja vu feeling of having been someplace that you've never consciously been before in this lifetime, a familiarity with landscape. My friend and I were talking yesterday about how much she and she's traveled a lot more than I have, and she loves the state of Virginia, and no place else is really home to her, and she has been blessed to go to a number of different countries, and in New Zealand, she's been to England, she's been to Germany, I think she's been to Australia, so she's been around a bit, and she is absolutely tickled to death with the United States. She said not just for what we have here, but because it feels like home to her. And so she feels that many lifetimes she has been here, and I would say that's a very good indicator. Another indicator is that, yes, she was here, and there were happy lifetimes, ones that were more simple, ones that did not leave her stressed and upset or losing her life or feeling fear. And she feels very strongly she had been a Native American before, and that's also very true. So getting back to what you can do is being aware of having been somewhere before. Dreams often, especially if they are dreams showing you in different or people in different costumes, if the dress of different ages, is a very important clue. That's one that is one of the more classic clues of having been in another lifetime. Feeling that you know somebody, that you've met them before, knowing what they're going to say before they say it, these are indications that you have known this person in another lifetime, and also, or as well, in the spheres between lifetimes where we go after we leave this body to continue to learn and grow and develop, because we do have life between lives. And it's important to know that that's something that you can expect when you leave this earth plane, is to go before a group or a council to sort of go over your life's duties, what you had wanted to accomplish, what you did accomplish, how you accomplished it, your success rate and your failure rate, where you followed through, where you could have improved, where you exceeded your expectations. All of these things are part of where you get your judgment. This is part of the judgment after a life, and I believe over time that this judgment has been distorted to think that you'll be standing before a judge and, like St. Peter, and, condemned to death or moved to heaven or what have you. We really, in essence, judge ourselves when we leave this earth plane. That is something that most people don't realize. And I would like you to know that we are our own most critical judges in many ways. So remember to be kind to yourselves. Another focus would be, and this technique I found very useful many years ago because I was curious about certain skills and gifts that I have. If you have certain gifts, certain leanings, a desire to be in a certain field or a certain life labor or joy or what have you, or calling, that is very often an indication that you have had a lifetime in that past and that you are able to go ahead and continue to develop that arena in this new lifetime. If you were a piano teacher, for example, in another lifetime, you might feel the desire to become a one who earns their living through playing the piano, a concert pianist or a jazz artist or what have you. It can take so very, very many forms. That, again, is a real indication that you've lived another life and you've had certain gifts that you developed, because most people who come here worked on these gifts in another lifetime. And this, and a lifetime where they are very successful is one where they utilize the discipline and training of other lifetimes to obtain success in this lifetime. The same thing, if you have this gift and you don't use it, you may not be able to keep on to it. You may lose the ability. Again, it's a matter of using what you have, just like a muscle that you would want to develop. And if you don't work out or don't follow certain guidelines, it just never develops. Or you lose the ability. So these are things, again, consider in your life. Dreams, feelings of deja vu, feelings of knowing, a sense of having met this person before or knowing them, and recognizing places. The one that I found the most helpful was one that I found in the Rosicrucian book that talked about developing the ability to see one's own past lives. And this is extremely simple and extremely easy to do, provided you don't have 100,000 kids running around and you aren't on call 24/7 with your family. That is, go into a room where you have a mirror, one room where you are comfortable, where you can sit comfortably, because this is going to take a little while. Go into, it doesn't have to be at night, but I would say a darkened room, because it's just easier to see the changes this under a darkened room circumstance. Now, again, I'm going to say you would have a candle or a low light, and candle light is easier for whatever reason. My feeling is fluorescent would not be the best thing, but a white candle, and for no reason other than that white reflects light more fully, more strongly, I should say, than any other color. But place, and you could do it in front of your mirror, in front of your vanity, or, you know, sit in front of your full-length mirror, but someplace where you're comfortable, wear clothes that you're comfortable, that you can breathe in. Put this candle to the left of you. Why left? I don't know exactly, but the reading said put it to the left, so I follow that. And then gaze at or into your own eyes and try not to blink. Focus in your mind a question that you would have. You can ask for a former lifetime. Who were you in another lifetime? You can ask, where did I get my special skills, or why am what former lifetime, this one I like, what former lifetime has made the greatest impression or impacted me the great most in this lifetime. I can't talk today for all the tea in China. I cannot understand it. Anyway, ask yourself a question to which you really desire the answer. And then keep that question in your focus and gaze into your own eyes in the mirror. Now, it may take a while, and try not to blink a lot. That's the other thing that I would like to emphasize. Try not to blink a lot. It might take you several tries to do this, okay? Don't do it for more than 5 or 10 minutes the first time. Then try it, later on, another day, another few days. Again, sit in front of the mirror with the white candle, darkened room, and just gaze into your own eyes and concentrate on the answer to the question you have asked. It can be any question that is important, but at least one that would be of good use to you to have the answer to. Then, after doing this for several times, you're going to begin to find that you can gaze into your own eyes. You might find your eyes watering at first. You might find it difficult to concentrate. Your mind's wandering. Just gently bring back your attention to focus to that one question or the intent and just listen to the inner voice and just remain calm. Don't become disappointed, because some people are faster than others. Some people can do it in the first sitting. Some people take 2 or 3 weeks of consistent practice. So it really is individual as to how quickly you will be able to get some definitive response to asking this question of yourself. Then I will tell you, now let me tell you what happens next. Next, when you begin to do this, you will begin to find that your vision of looking only into your eyes and not blinking as much, you can find it becomes an easier and easier to do as time goes by. And then you will begin to see that the shadows darken on the outer edges. You become more aware of seeing only your own eyes. Everything in the mirror disappears. For me, it goes dark, and then it becomes charcoal gray. And that becomes very misty for me, so that I have a hard time seeing anything else. And the last to disappear in this are my eyes. It's not that difficult, but I keep watching my own eyes. And eventually, what happens is the darkness comes in, and out of the dark mist, it's like a fog. It's all swirling. What comes next is my general outline. It's like a skeleton. It's like I'm looking at the skeleton of a being, just as though you would do a forensic art, if you've ever seen that on TV, where they are beginning to take a skull and flesh it out. Well, that's exactly what it's like with me. And I don't know if it's that way for everyone, but for me, this is what it is like. And it becomes a skull. And don't get scared, because that doesn't mean you're dead. It just means that you are beginning to take in the response that you are seeking. Then, very quickly, the skull begins to be covered with tissues, blood vessels, etc., and it's done rather quickly for me. I mean, I would say in a matter of a minute or less, all of this is going through. And then what happens is it begins to see eyes. I realize they're my eyes I'm still looking at, but there are different eyes. I recognize the soul, but I understand it is a body different than mine. The eyes are a different color, shape, the skin, all of this is different. And what I see gazing back at me is the face of who I was in the lifetime, as an answer to my question of who was I in that lifetime. Then you get hair and then clothing. And then you can ask other questions. And it takes, as I said, it takes a little while to do this. Once, however, you get started, it can become so rapid that you can sit down, light the candle, look into the mirror, and boom, the transformation begins immediately, and you see yourself. It may be the same lifetime. It may be a different lifetime. You have a different question. You can ask yourself any question you want from that lifetime. What did I do that was important? Who was I? Where did I live? What time period did I live? What were my significant relationships? Is somebody in my life now that was there then? All of these questions, any questions you want, will be answered at that time. And this is for yourself. And this is what you have control over. And again, part of my being here is to teach you how to become empowered in seeking your own wisdom and knowledge. It's very important in my book to not become dependent on someone else, but to rely on yourself for getting the answers that you seek in your life. It's not a bad thing to ask others to help and so forth and so on, or to get readings. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that everyone has the gift of looking into their own life and their own soul and to find out their own reason and mission for being. And that carries so much more weight in living your life than in relying on someone else. To me, it's self-empowering. It is allowing you to develop your own special skills, which might be in the future, looking to the past lives for other people. It might be becoming more compassionate and caring as you understand who you were and what you did. It might enlighten you as to changing your life path. This is very important for you to empower yourself to move forward on your life's journey so that you need not come back and repeat and repeat and repeat the lessons that you have learned. And I don't know about you, but you know, I really hate to be kept back a grade and have to go over and over things. So the more I can learn about me and who I am and what I can do to make myself grow and reach and stretch beyond where I am now, that I wish to do. And I wish that for everyone. It's very important because you are the one who stands in judgment of yourself. You are the one who stands alone in judgment when you pass from this earth plane. You alone are responsible for your own life. And it is important to take charge of your life and not put your life or what you do in the hands of anyone else. And it's very, very important that you understand this. A lot of times I do have people ask me about things, and I do not mind. It's my joy to give answers. But it's an even greater joy to have people reach out and embrace themselves and to open up their own hearts and minds and souls to their own qualities and abilities that are innate in every one of us. There'll be times when you'll be needing answers, and I'm not going to be there, and neither is any other psychic, and maybe nobody else is there. So once you are trained by yourself to find the answers, you have yourself with you everywhere. And you need not be afraid. You can immediately take charge and take control of where you are and what you are doing and answer questions that before perhaps you were not able to answer. It allows you to be aware of your own power and to trust that being which resides in your soul, you, to begin to trust and acknowledge and love and accept yourself. Many people find this a difficult situation because they have had a lifetime or many lifetimes where their trust and belief in themselves has been undermined through environmental circumstances or through training or through just life lessons that they had to learn in order to develop greater skills of security and self-understanding and self-approval and so forth. And it's important for you to realize that in the final analysis, you and you alone make the decisions that lead you to the joy of living, to promoting growth in your life, to being who you truly, really are. And that is my idea of heaven on earth, is when you become so empowered that you can know within you that you can make decisions and that you are aware of right decisions. And it knows when you can say no or yes to other people, that you are not in fault to any other human being, that you don't have to give of yourself when it is not appropriate to give. This allows you to be truly, truly free. Taking care of your body is also important. Taking care of the soul is important. Taking care of the emotions is important. You are a very complex, unique human being, and every portion of your being is important to acknowledge, love, and to grow to know. Infants have a wonderful, wonderful sense of themselves, and they gradually lose it because as they move more and more into living in this earth plane, they sort of forget because nobody, for the most part, reminds them of who they really are, of the true magnificence and grandeur of their soul. And then there are those who make fun of it, and we have been taught through years of abuse of power not to respect and honor and love ourselves and our decisions. And we are told so often that we are wrong about something, when indeed we are probably right. But, you know, we come to buy into other people's fantasies of who is right and who is wrong. And again, I would emphasize that learning to grow back into your own power and assuming the mantle of leadership and the control of your own life is where we all should be. And it's not that easy. When I first started looking into my past life, I think it took me, a better part of a week to start seeing things in the mirror, not hallucinations. My question was, in the first instance, as I recall, was what former lifetime has the greatest impact on me in this lifetime? And what shocked me was the answer to that question, because I wasn't expecting it, having been raised a Catholic and pretty much a Christian and having very little contact with other religions. I was not prepared truly to see that the face that looked back at me when the mist finally cleared and everything was in order was that of a Buddhist monk. I could even tell the color of the robe, which was a saffron color. And I knew that I had attained a much higher level of spirituality in that lifetime. And that was what was controlling or impacting me the most in this lifetime. And I was absolutely fascinated, because if you'd asked me about it, I would have chosen a lifetime where I was a lady of wealth or what have you. I would not have chosen a lifetime where I was a Buddhist monk. And that was, close to 1,000 years ago, as we would count time, it's hard to say. Another lifetime that I had, as I began to explore, I asked where I was what monastery I was in, was I one who was a very strong aesthete, what monastery, where was it, and would get the answers to my questions as I asked them. And then I just moved on, quite frankly, because, you know, that was then, this is now. I've now got a life here and now to lead, so to remain tied to a lifetime in a past doesn't really do me much good. The fact that I got the information was absolutely wonderful. The fact that I can now understand and have a greater respect and admiration for other religions as a result of finding out that I have, over the centuries and eons of time, been in this religion or that religion or a nature worshiper or what have you. This was absolutely fascinating to me, and it also made me aware that there are many roads to heaven, not just one. And it is important for us to honor and respect everybody's path to heaven and not to trample on anyone, nor yet allow ourselves to be trampled on in turn, which is why I am saying so strongly is learn to please, honor, and love, and take care of yourself, because that's what's important in this lifetime. One needs to be able to stand up for oneself and not be made to hostage or let oneself become hostage to another thought, one especially that doesn't feel right. It's important to honor yourself and who you are in all that you do. So my feeling is I have had a number of lifetimes where I have been in leadership, but then again, I've had lifetimes where I was pretty much one of the followers in the crowd, folks. I was not a spectacular lifetime. And another lifetime I asked for, because I've had issues with men in this lifetime. I mean, I've really had difficulty forming friendships or relationships at times, and I went to ask. And what I was shown was a lifetime as a cavalier, probably around the time of King Henry the 14th, King Louis the 14th. I'm sorry, not King Henry. It's a wrong, sorry, must be a Freudian slip there. King Henry was a good English king. Anyway, the French king, King Louis. And in that lifetime, what I was shown was a very dramatic picture of myself as a cavalier. I must say I was handsome, at least to me now. I was very handsome. I had long, dark brown, almost black hair, wavy, curled. I have always had a love of wearing a lace at my throat, a cravat. I've always had a love of wearing feathers and hats that have plumes in them. I've always been fond of that for whatever reason, and that reason is that in that lifetime, that's what I wore. I was also one of these love them and leave them kind of guys. And as a result, I broke many a heart and was rather callous about the way I treated women. So in this lifetime, as I say, payback is hell, I have had issues with men and honesty. And sometimes I say I must have been a stinker too, because I've had trouble with issues with people being honest with me. So what I can say is you want to be careful what you sow, because you sure do reap it if you're not careful. And I found also that I had been in this lifetime in North America as a Indian and a female who was able to do readings. I was psychic. I was considered the equivalent of the shaman, and I guess I was a shaman woman at the time. I was able to interpret dreams, and I had a very natural propensity towards that, and almost lost my life, had to flee from my tribe because of the interference of, again, a man who wanted me, and I didn't want him, and he made life so miserable that I fled, and he pushed me off a cliff and left me for dead. And another tribe came and took me in, who had heard of me and took me in, and I became their shaman. And it caused a lot of unpleasantness, although the new tribe treated me very well, and I remained with them for the rest of my life's journey in that lifetime. And it also gave me an understanding of why I had such a great love of the United States and of the West and the East Coast, and why I have such a great love of the woods and have always been drawn to the outdoors in the United States and have loved being here and visited and felt comfortable with different parts of the United States that I had never visited before. And that's because I had been there in another lifetime. So again, I'm pointing out things that might make sense to you. We are about 10 minutes away from drawing to a close today. If you want a reading, you're going to have to make it quick. If you're listening, I am so glad you are. I hope you are getting information that you can use. You can always call me at area code 202-387-2080, which is my office number. Or you can email me at psychicworlds4@aol.com. You can email me or reach me through BBS Radio. And I'm always glad to talk to you or to respond to you. Just give me a call or send me an email, and I will be happy to respond. I am available for readings and for online hypnosis, although I'm very careful about doing online hypnosis. I have to be sure that everybody is on the same page and that you are comfortable with it. If you've done meditation before and focus, that's a good thing, because all it takes is really requires is focus on your part and the desire to get answers to questions you would have. And hypnotherapists are simply guides or facilitators, if you will, to help you find the answers within your own being, which is so very important. We are here to help you become independent and to live a better life. That's what we're here for, just so you know it. At any rate, to continue on with some other lifetimes, I was told about this lifetime by someone else, and I've had a dream about it, and I've had responses, physical responses to certain things. I cannot tolerate. I feel a big, no, let's put it this way. I find it impossible for me to go to the Holocaust Museum. The very thought makes me get sick to my stomach. And I wondered about why it was. I felt such a compassion for people when I was a little child, especially the few that I came in contact with who had been prisoners of war during World War II. They were Jewish or Ukrainian or whatever, and even German people who had come over. And I felt a great deal of compassion and understanding for people who were not treated well. And what I was told a number of years ago at the ARE, which is the Association of Research Enlightenment, was that in my immediate prior life, I had been a Jewish rabbi, and I have since done some looking into that lifetime, as well as having dreams, to understand myself better and to know that I lost my life in that lifetime. And one of the reasons why I chose to be a Catholic in this lifetime was because I didn't want another Holocaust to occur. And there's an interesting book by Rabbi Gershom, I think that's his name, who wrote a number of years ago, maybe as much as 10 years now, about how many souls who have come back, who were killed during World War II, who were Jewish, chose to come back in bodies that were in religions other than the Jewish religion in order to make sure there was not another Holocaust. In other words, it was to protect souls who were going to come in the future. And we would make sure, through our own understood experiences, which were subconscious or subconscious really, that it would not be allowed. We would be protesters of such an atrocity. And I find that extremely interesting. Again, it makes great sense to me. At any rate, I have learned a little bit, both through flashbacks and memories, about that lifetime. And it explains why I have always felt a compassion and an understanding and a kinship with anyone of Jewish faith or background. And oddly enough, I don't feel a revulsion or an anger towards the Germans and German people as some people do. I apparently was spiritually aware enough when I was in that lifetime where I suffered so, and my family suffered as well, to understand that it, the few did not mean the whole race of German people. It's just that I've been very careful not to condemn anybody and not to judge people for who they are and what they are, and for especially for their religion, and why I am so very tolerant of others, because I had faced intolerance myself. So again, when you look into past lifetimes or areas where you are suffering or lessons seem particularly hard, you will find that there is an answer that makes perfect sense to you and why you're going through or learning or suffering, whatever it is you are. It, the world is not an unfriendly, unkind jungle, and it is not a place for punishment unless you ask it to be, unless you wish it to be, unless you choose that it becomes such. So my feeling is that in learning to open yourself up to learning about who you really are, you are giving yourself a magnificent gift. Also, one of the things that you should know is that your soul, your higher self, your very beingness will never, and I mean never, allow you to have access to information that you cannot handle. I will repeat that because it is very important. When you seek this journey, when you are on this self-knowledge and self-learning, you will not be given information that you cannot safely handle and live with. It's not the way that works in the human world. You are always, and I emphasize that, always protected by your higher self. You are always a spiritually protected being. So the information that you receive will not be too much for you to handle or to understand or to love out yourself. Do you understand? Each of you must believe this, because I cannot steer you wrong. I have my own personal knowledge of this. I have it from my teachers, my guides, my guardians. It has been repeated throughout history. Always. Edgar Cayce said it. All the great teachers do. You do not get information that you are not capable of dealing with when you seek it and receive it on your own. Do not let fear of what you are going to find, that you can't deal with it or be able to live with it or anything else, because such information will never, ever be given to you. You can't beg, borrow, or steal it. You can't scrape it out from your psyche, because the best and truest information on yourself is that which will help you grow and become a better, loving, caring human being. The universe is not out to trick you, trap you, or put you into a situation where you cannot grow, where you will suffer. Understand that. It is a compassionate universe. It's man's own misconceptions, which quite frankly have a tendency to throw us for a loop and make us think that something terrible is going to happen. There is no fear in seeking the within, except your own illusion of what you think might be there. There is nothing wrong with finding out about yourself. It is always information that you can handle, that you can be free with, secure with. Okay? this is what I wish you to understand. Nothing will harm you. And that's God's guarantee, because he created you out of love, and there's nothing that he does that is harmful to what he, to whom he has created. Almost said what? Getting a little too far out of my thought there. We are loved. We are cared for. We are precious beings. Don't ever think that we are not. And there is only love and compassion. And some people have said, well, I wish it were so, but I don't believe it because blah, blah, blah. And then they provide all this information, which most of it has been put upon them by, God bless us, well-meaning people who were just as ignorant as the day is long and, you know, don't know what kind of damage they've done to people's understandings and beliefs. So I will leave you today with this thought. There is within you the power of good and the power of God. I will not say there is power of evil, because the human being is not evil. There is only the power of love. Everything else is an illusion. I'd like you to look into the mirror and to love yourself and to speak respectfully to yourself and to give of yourself the greatest compassion and caring you can, and to joyously look into the future to know that you are powerful beings, you are loved and beloved, and there is nothing greater on this earth that is desired than the joy of mankind. So I will leave you with that thought, and I had hoped to get some calls today, but glory be to St. Peter, you left me yapping to myself again today, and that's okay. I guess it was just a day of sharing and learning, and that's fine too. But next time, if you could breathe a little louder so I could hear you out there, it would help. I would love to talk to you. And it makes my producer feel happy if I get phone calls, you know. Otherwise, they wonder if anybody's listening. And they always like listeners, because then that raises their level of participation, and this is something they have a desire for. So I am going to bid you adieu and say welcome to the next beginning of the next day of the rest of your life, and have great joy and peace, and I hope that you prosper and profit, and that abundance is yours in great measure, for you all truly, truly deserve it. I look forward to talking to you again next week. Thank you, and again, I'm Phyllis Pricer for the Higher Dimensions, saying goodbye.